Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I'm almost laughing at myself.
Welcome to the program.
Whoops, there we go. I got to turn myself off. I can only listen to one of me at the same time. Two is too many. Of course, I do know some people that could probably multitask and they could have multiple conversations with themselves, but I'm not one of those people. Anyway, I'm glad to be with you this Saturday morning. It's a good day outside. There's like a fog embankment around everywhere, and it's beautiful. I tell you what it makes me think of. It makes me think people are going to go to the gardening department, and they're going to go to the nurseries today, and they're going to look for plants because it's just something fun to do outside. Plant a plant. Did you know that plants, they do a great job of extracting nutrients from the soil? You could probably build the case that plants and us as humans were like solar-powered batteries. They require light. How well does a blueberry bush do if it doesn't have light? They don't do well at all. How about human beings? We do not do well without light, but we're trying to do that, aren't we? I came across some information I want to share with you, and of course I find that fascinating. This comes from Russell J. Ryder, Ph.D. But I want to read this to you. And just, all I want you to do is just consider a few points here. If you asked me the question, you said, Dr. Morgan, what is the difference between a person that lives to be 95 and they're in excellent health before they pass away? They just go strong right up to the very end. They take care of themselves. They can still garden every day. They go to the grocery store. They shop for groceries. They prepare their own food. They pay their bills. They go to church on Sundays. What's the difference between a person age 95 that's had 95 years of being very productive, they're healthy, they're radiant, they can take care of themselves, they spend their energy blessing other people, and somebody that's had chronic, severe health problems, and they pass away at age 65? I think I read yesterday that Wade Wilson, formerly a coach and an NFL football player, died at age 60. Maybe it was 61, but I think it said 60 on the news feed. But, you know, you and I might think, well, that's just much too long. Well, obviously, a person that passes away at age 60, there has got to be some underlying issue that's going on that prevents them from living an additional 35 years at the age of 95. Well, I came across this article. I'm going to read it to you. It's just very brief. It's from Dr. Ryder's book. And I just consider this. Now, when I read this to you, I do not want you to think I'm trying to overpromise or exaggerate the details. This is just a study on mice. But to me, it's very intriguing. And, of course, we can ask the question, well, why did some mice live a certain length of time, and why did some live a whole lot longer? Well, here goes. In the year of November 1985, George's Maestroni and two of his colleagues began an animal study that would provide the first convincing evidence of melatonin's ability to extend life. If you have not heard of melatonin, the vast majority of all melatonin is made in the digestive tract or in the gut of a human being. And I think the numbers are, for humans, it's 400% more production of melatonin takes place in the gut than it does in a small gland at the very center, or in the very center of the brain, called the pineal gland. Well, let me finish reading this to you. The experiment involved 20 19-month-old mice. So here's the numbers again. They were 29 months old, or I mean they were 19 months old, and there were 20 of them. And if you do the math on that, 1 year or 12 months is 365 days. And I'm just going to round it off in my mind that 7 additional months on top of that. So 12 plus 7 is 19. That's 365 plus 210 days equals 575 days old. So here's our starting point. These mice are exactly 575 days old. The researchers divided the mice into two groups, and they housed them in identical cages. The animals were fed the same diet, and they were exposed exactly to the same environmental conditions. The only difference was that each evening, 10 of the mice were given a trace amount of melatonin in their drinking water. I said a trace. At this advanced stage of their life, 575 days of age, the mice would be producing little melatonin on their own. In effect, they were being put on melatonin replacement therapy. And yes, if you're asking the question, does the human body produce less melatonin with aging? And the answer is yes. That is true for human beings. So 5 months into the study, the researchers observed what they called an astonishing difference between the two groups of rodents. The mice that had been drinking plain water were showing the expected signs of aging. They had lost weight. You know how, like older people, they begin to shrink and they lose a lot of their strength. They develop dry, patchy fur. They look like mice that were ready to die. They were humped over with their posture. They slowed down. They didn't participate in as much as they did before. Have you ever been to the store and watched an older person walk into the store when they're just shuffling and they're humped over? Or maybe they've gone to the store, but somebody left them to sit on a bench while the other person went to shop for groceries, and they kind of sit there with their mouth open. Anyway, not trying to be negative, it's just the way it is. Meanwhile, the melatonin mice were glossy and plump and cavorting around in their cages like older people in the movie Cocoon. The real story, however, unfolded a month later when the mice that were drinking plain water began to die one by one right on schedule. While the melatonin-treated mice continued to thrive. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I'm making this up. I find this so fascinating. When the last mouse had died, the researchers discovered that the average survival time of the water-only drinking mice was 752 days, which is very, very typical for this particular strain of mice. But the mice that had been given the melatonin nightcaps, they lived an average of 931 days. Folks, that's exactly a 20% increase in lifespan. To me, that's just unbelievable. Now, what I want to do, you can tell what we're going to talk about on Saturday morning is what I've been reading and studying during the week, but this is so interesting. Now, I have a chart in front of me. You cannot see it, but oh my goodness, I want to read this to you, and I want you to tell me what you think about this. And of course, I realize this topic is not the best topic of all time, and I promise, I mean nothing negative by it. It's just information. But, you know, I think every human being is going to be affected on some level by this. I have had I don't talk about this, but I've had a relative that has taken their life. Anyway, let me read this to you. Studies have shown that most people who commit suicide were suffering from untreated or untreatable depression. And to me, that kind of makes sense. They're not dealing with just a tremendous amount of joy in their life, right? Well, the question is, did they have low levels of melatonin as well? And so a gentleman by the name of Dr. Michael Stanley at Columbia University believes the answer is yes. He's saying yes, most likely they had very low levels of melatonin. And so here's what he did. Dr. Michael Stanley at Columbia University, he measured the melatonin levels in the pineal glands of 19 suicide victims and also 19 people who died from other causes. So that the two groups would be as similar as they could possibly make it. The control group consisted of people who had died suddenly or violently, such as from automobile accidents or gunshot wounds. So you'd probably agree with me that if you die in a head-on collision with a concrete pillar under a bridge, or you veer off the road and, you know, crash down a cliff, that'd be kind of a violent, sudden death. I'm not saying it's the same as suicide, but, you know, But they also measure the pineal glands that were the victims of shotgun wounds, or gunshot wounds, I should have said. The groups were matched for age and time of death as well. Now, the results show that the suicide victims, they had far less melatonin in their pineal glands in the controls. And you remember, the controls were people that died a violent death from, you know, falling off a building or down the side of a mountain and dying, or a bad car crash, or they were killed. The difference was especially striking when the deaths occurred at night, and that's supposed to be the time when melatonin is being actively produced by your body. Of course, I'm looking at the chart right here. It shows controls, meaning people that died very suddenly, a violent death, but that wasn't suicide. They have over 200 picograms of melatonin in their pineal gland between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Those that took their lives between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., they have just a few picograms. I mean, it's almost 200 times greater. Anyway, that's just very, very intriguing to me. Now, I want to share this with you also. So you remember what I said earlier. Probably easily 400% more melatonin is produced in the lining of the gut. Of course, I always think to myself, well, are these highly specialized cells in the gut that it's their job? Do they have the task of producing melatonin for the body? And I think yes. Of course, in my mind, everything that God has designed is very precise and specific and specialized. It does exactly what He designed it to do. So I just find it intriguing that we have a gland at the center of the brain that produces melatonin, but we also have specialized cells in the lining of the gut that produce it also. Well, this is really only for information right here. I'm not attempting to make it say more than what it is, but anyway, let me share this with you right here. I don't know if you've ever come across individuals that have true schizophrenia. Maybe you have. Personally, I think they're very pleasant people. There are two here in Jacksonville that I see all the time. And when I say I see them all the time, they walk up and down the sidewalk all hours of the day that I can tell. They have conversations with themselves. Sometimes I'll roll down my window and I'll listen to one of them. And the guy is super, super smart. I think he is. But these conversations, sometimes they turn into full-blown shouting matches. And I don't know who Ned is, but Ned is somebody that, I'll just say this gentleman is shouting and talking to, trying to convince him or, the merits of his case. I don't know who wins those conversations. But if you asked him to unlock a car door that was locked, the guy could do it. If you asked him to pick a lock, he could do it. He's just a master locksmith. Anyway. But the topic is schizophrenia, so I want to float this idea to you. There was a study done on people whose pineal glands had been removed, most likely because there was some type of a tumorous growth within the brain and it was damaged. And that's all I know in this study, because it doesn't flesh it out the way that I'd like. So there was a reason to surgically remove a person's pineal gland. And so what this does is, this is just going to provide further evidence of a link between a healthy pineal gland and then having a very healthy state of mind. Well, after these individuals recovered from surgery, the patients were plagued, and these are normal people that don't have schizophrenia, okay? But there was a reason to surgically remove their pineal gland. So after recovering from surgery, these patients were plagued with recurrent symptoms of depression. They didn't have depression before. They had horrible anxiety, and they had not known anxiety before. They also had experienced hypersomnia, which means excessive sleepiness. Almost all of them had headaches. They could have been migraine headaches, it doesn't say, but my guess is, yeah. They had auditory illusions and hallucinations. Now, I don't know if you know what an auditory illusion is or a hallucination, but you're probably hearing things that don't really exist, and it could be voices from other people. That is one thing that I have never experienced in my life. I have never heard voices. No one is sitting over my shoulder talking to me, telling me, you know, giving me commands of things to do. And yeah, I've been tired before, but I don't think I've hallucinated. I thought I saw Bigfoot run up the side of that mountain that time, but I mean, I can't prove it. I mean, he was too far away. He was just really dark and hairy running up the side of a mountain. Maybe that was a hallucination on my part. I don't know. And so the fact that they remove the pineal gland and then they can cause visual and auditory hallucinations, that's of particular interest. Now, what if somebody has just very, very severe ringing in the ear? Well, all I'm trying to suggest is these people didn't have all these issues until the pineal gland was removed. And so the study is there any possible connection between low levels of melatonin and then, you know, having schizophrenia? Indeed, a number of studies have shown that people with schizophrenia have unusually low levels of melatonin. In 1992, I is referring to Dr. Russell J. Ryder, Ph.D. He collaborated on a study designed to compare the melatonin levels of a group of drug-free paranoid schizophrenics, which, to the best of my knowledge, that is a subgroup of schizophrenia, with a group. So he compared the melatonin levels of paranoid schizophrenics with people that were healthy, of a similar age. And he goes on to write that we have found that schizophrenics were producing far less melatonin than the control group. As you can see in figure 26, which you can't see that, but I'm looking at it. But I'm telling you, it's off the chart. Healthy people, their bodies, they do exactly what God designed to do. They start pumping out melatonin at exactly the right time. And so they can plot a course over a 24-hour period of time. And those that have schizophrenia, they just produce literally next to none. I just find that very interesting. Now let me go on to the next topic. Now, I don't know, because I didn't look up the studies, but with the internet being what it is, you could probably Google a search and you could probably type in how many people go to see a doctor because of a mental or a mind issue. And that could be everything from, and forgive me for wording this way, I mean no disrespect and no one's casting stones here, but if somebody says, I have severe anxiety, or I have panic attacks, or the depression, it's like there's a black cloud over me every single day. I just can't break out of this. What is this? But I think that there's probably a fair amount of people. That is the reason why they go to the doctor, because they're dealing with issues of either severe panic attacks, or anxiety, or depression, or maybe it could be at the other end of the spectrum when it comes to the brain or the mind. They could say, I'm developing dementia. I don't remember anything. Something's not working right. Well, I bet you those numbers are pretty high. But you know, one of the things that is absolutely the highest of all time, people go to doctors because they are in pain. Yes, it is true. Pain is a signal that something is not right. I guess it's a question of, what do we do to address that? Do we just flood people with pain-relieving drugs like morphine or fentanyl or other opioids? Or do we try to see if we can't figure this out? Well, I want to read this to you right here about chronic pain and melatonin, because to me, this is just such a fascinating topic. And I realize I'm looking at the clock. I just now looked at it. I thought I'd been talking for 2 minutes. It's more like 20. If you do want to join me on the radio, maybe you have a question of some kind. Well, I'm totally devoted to helping you. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to make fun of you. I may make fun of myself, but I'm not going to make fun of you. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If nobody calls, I want to read this to you about chronic pain. It's just, never do I try to make one topic a panacea. I mean, maybe I do it a little bit just because I'm kind of biased. But if I can compel you and convince you that there are options and solutions for your health problems, and I'm going to do that. That's a lot better than just having a procedure that doesn't do anything other than drain your life savings and then cause further health problems. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Morgan. What I want to know is, within about the last year, a little over, I've been, like, I was wanting to go to sleep, and even a friend who said, you're nodding off, so I'm going to Bethesda Clinic, going to be able to see whether I have narcolepsy or not. But I just heard you say that the low levels of melatonin could be a factor on something, like you said, schizophrenia and other stuff.
Well, that
what
was
would your take be on that?
Well, the study that I just read before I started talking about schizophrenia was, it's the same topic. But they showed that when people had a surgical reason to have their pineal gland removed, which that produces melatonin in the body, that was one of the number one things they suffered with. They were just sleepy all the time. They were neither really, you know, you don't want to be a zombie where you're like, you want to be awake and fully awake when you can be.
Yes.
And there's a time that you want to flip that switch and turn everything off and go to sleepy time dreamland. But that's what they noticed is when melatonin production completely dropped off, they were just so super, super sleepy all the time.
Oh. Could there be a factor that could cause that, a nutritional or...
Oh, absolutely.
Could affect the gland or the melatonin?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Would that also be a sign of narcolepsy? I don't know, sir.
Well, are you taking any over-the-counter drugs or prescription drugs?
No, sir. My first appointment will be in about a month and a half, 2 months, and right now all I take is Eliquis for blood clots. But
what if that drug is destroying your production of melatonin?
I don't know.
And here, I don't know the answer to that, but let me say this. I want you to name to me, what is the name of an over-the-counter blood thinner that people take every day?
I can't tell you.
Well, it's called aspirin.
Oh.
But you've heard doctors say, I want you to take an 81 milligram baby aspirin every day to help keep your blood thin. I'm sorry, I kind of set you up for that, but anyway. But they've shown that if you take either Tylenol or aspirin or ibuprofen, that destroys your body's production of melatonin. Now, I would have to look that up, but there are many, many drugs. I think Klonopin, Metoprolol, and Atenolol, those are beta blockers. They've been shown to totally destroy melatonin production. And steroids, they'll do it too. That's actually a pretty common story for a person telling me, my doctor prescribed prednisone, and I haven't slept in 3 months. So it's just horrible, but there's a lot of drugs that do that. But blood thinners are very famous for doing that. I'm just not sure about the one that you're taking. Do you call it Eliquis?
Yes, but I've only been Eliquis since August of last year, but I've been nodding off some time before that.
Okay, well, do you think that you have worsened a little bit since you started taking Eliquis when it comes to the nodding off?
That I can't say. Maybe. I'll put a maybe on it, but I can't be definitive because I was really nodding off before the blood clot came up.
Well, there's a lot of factors. If you went to a doctor and he said, all right, here's what we're going to do. Let me run some labs on you, and these are the things I want to look at. Your body requires what's called vitamin B12 to help...
Yes, they put me on it, though.
Well, what they can do is, if you go to the Bethesda Clinic, they can run some labs, and they can check your vitamin B12 levels very easily. What did it show?
I don't have the paper with me, and I don't know the things with, yeah.
Well, if you have, are you driving in a car?
Yes, that's okay. I'm off on a side road where no traffic is in.
Well, I don't want you to fall. Okay. I don't want you to go off into the ditch and have a wreck over this.
No, but I slept at work. I'm okay.
If you had a pencil or a pen handy, I would have you write down one very simple lab test that they can run for you if you're willing. But it may reveal a whole lot about you. It's called homocysteine. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes, I've heard you say it, mentioned something like that before.
If they ordered a homocysteine level, and here's all I'm suggesting. I'm not trying to make a panacea out of this conversation, but when you start seeing issues come up in the brain and the body, it's usually when homocysteine gets above the number 7.7. And so if your homocysteine is like 6.0, then obviously I'm on the wrong track. I'm not on the right line of thinking to try to help you. But if your homocysteine level is elevated, that's going to tell me there's a whole bunch of stuff in place that may be counterproductive to you being as healthy as long as you'd like.
Uh-huh.
Actually, personally, I'm tickled to hear that you're working.
I am too. God's been very good.
Oh, that is so good to acknowledge that. Work is good.
I got on the side of the road, and I'm writing this down right now.
And so what they can do is they can measure your melatonin levels just very, very easy. And they can measure your homocysteine levels. And what I was going to say is when you start showing higher levels of serotonin, homocysteine, what that suggests is that you're not able to process B vitamins in a great way. So if we go back to vitamin B12, there must have been a reason why they recommended you start taking probably sublingual B12, probably because they started seeing some things in your blood that didn't look exactly right.
And so they didn't say sublingual. I went to the store and got the tablets.
Do you suck on them under your tongue, or do you just swallow them?
Well, I had been swallowing them. I didn't think I could do the other way.
Well, I'll just open that up to you. If you were to go to the store and you purchased a form of vitamin B12 called methylcobalamin, and you were to put
methylcobalamin.
Yeah, well...
How do you spell it, please?
Oh, no, you're going to make me spell it.
I'll just do the best.
No, that's all right. Methyl, the word methyl is M-E-T-H-Y-L.
Uh-huh.
And then cobalamin. Okay, cobalamin
is... I'll just do the best I can. Okay.
Well, if you just look for the word, if they have vitamin B12 and in parentheses it says methyl, then you are on the right track. You're using a form that your body can utilize a lot more agreeably.
Okay.
It's either that or I have to force you to go to Luby's today for lunch and have liver and onions.
No, thanks.
How dare you refuse my great idea?
No, that's a suggestion. I forgot about that.
And so
I haven't eaten liver in decades.
Well, and the thing of it is, at the end of World War II, there was a concentration camp in China, and they had more cases of an autoimmune disease called myasthenia gravis, or myasthenia gravis. And these men were so weak they couldn't function, they could barely lift their arms. But the solution for them at the time was they gave them calf liver, a pound of calf liver a day, and it was a cure for all of them. But calf liver is the greatest concentration of vitamin B12. It's not the only source. If you told me you wanted to eat tuna fish salad, I'd say, great, that's plenty of B12. Or chicken salad, something like that. But if your homocysteine levels are above 7.7, I would say we need to take that information and run with it, because that means that everything's not optimal in the body. And so your body requires B vitamins in order to manufacture and make what's called melatonin.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It sure does.
But you don't have any issues with congestive heart failure at all, do you?
No. Well, no, and the thing is, both parents are deceased, and I do not know the medical history on either of them. We don't have anything, any medical records surviving.
Where do your people come from?
Beg your pardon?
Do you know where your people come from?
We have Irish and supposedly English, Dutch, and French, and I have no idea anything
else.
Did you
say Irish?
Yes.
I promise you, I will not do anything to upset you, so your temper will flare with me on the phone this morning. I'm joking.
I'm not Irish patriotic.
I know, I'm just joking. Well, what I want you to do is when you go to the Bethesda Clinic, ask them to check your homocysteine levels. And I think that's going to be very, very revealing. But and let me go in a different train of thought right here. Your liver is not 100%, but pretty close to 100% responsible for how thick or how thin your blood is. Your liver regulates all that. And it's been a while since I've studied this topic, but there might be easily 46 to 47 precise chemical steps that have to take place to keep your blood flowing exactly at the right thickness. Not too thick and not too thin. And if you're taking Eliquis, why can't I go back and say, okay, what can we do to help improve how your liver manages the quality of the blood? And one of the things that I always think of is sulfur, sulfur, sulfur. So when I mentioned...
Oh, you said something the other day on it, and I did not get it. I was not able to listen to your program.
Yeah,
say something?
Yeah, it's kind of coming back to you now. But the reason why I recommend that you have the blood test called homocysteine is because that's a sulfur-bound molecule. When that builds up, that means your blood's getting more dirty or dirtier.
I know that's kind of a low-tech way of saying it. I don't think any other doctor would say it the same way I am. But I always think if the blood is getting thick and dirty, we want to do something to help kind of clean it up. But your body requires sulfur to do that. So if you love to eat eggs, if you love onions, I mean, are you willing to saute onions with a little bit of butter in the skillet?
I haven't done that in years, and it is so good.
Yes, it is. I had a lady the other day
tell me. I'm guilty of personal homicide, I guess.
No, don't say it that way, but, you know, but now that you
know. I'm trying to get better, you know.
Yeah, but now that you know, you're willing to kind of take steps to try to turn this around where you can get your health restored, right?
Yes.
And so you got to have sulfur to do that. It's hard to not recommend kale and Brussels sprouts and asparagus and broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower. Did I mention onions yet?
Yes. But,
so if you will, think about eating things like those. I can tell you right now, the two things that come to my mind that make the blood very thick and very dirty, it's going to be wheat and sugar.
I have a problem with sugar, and I've been eating wheat most of my life, you know, and my hips show it.
Can I tell you what I want to switch the wheat with?
Uh-huh.
There is a grain that is the highest substance in melatonin that I know of.
Yes.
And it's almost always considered very heart healthy. As a matter of fact, if you walk down the aisle of a grocery store and you see a box of cereal, and this cereal looks like little bitty small life rafts or donuts or a life preserver, what's that called?
I haven't been down the cereal aisle in the world either.
Good answer. Well, but you know what? You know what oatmeal is, don't you? But you do know what oatmeal is, don't you?
Oh, oatmeal. Oh, yes.
And so if you go to the store and say, I'm going to buy a bag of organic, old-fashioned, oats, and I'm going to soak them and ferment them, and then I'm going to cook them and eat them, well, you're getting a rich, rich source of melatonin. And so there's everything that God has made is very, very complicated. At least it is to me. But I always find it interesting, like, okay, you know, the very thing that's good for the body is good for the brain and everything else. But oats have one of the highest sources of melatonin. But melatonin is one of the ways that you kind of reset the sleep stuff that you've got going on right now.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm always, if somebody's falling asleep, I think, okay, why can't the blood transport enough oxygen? But you've got to have sulfur to do that. You know, there's a plant that filters the air in the home, and it probably does it so effectively it can reduce toxins, make the air cleaner. It's called aloe vera. But aloe vera gel is a great source of sulfur.
Oh, I did not know that.
In order to
get to take it for everything, and he was healthy.
In order to transport fat from the fat cells across the cell membrane into the mitochondria, where it can be burned up and gotten rid of, or burned for fuel or energy, you got to have sulfur to do that. There's this little structure, it's called a lipid raft, and it carries fat across the membrane of the cell into the mitochondria. But without sulfur, that doesn't happen. And so they've shown that when a child has horrible symptoms of autism, that's a severe sulfur deficiency. And when somebody has very, very severe Alzheimer's disease, and I'm talking about full-blown, you know, dementia, they just can't remember anything. That's a severe sulfur deficiency.
Yes, I've taken care of hundreds of Alzheimer's people in different places.
Yeah.
I did not know that, sir.
Well, and when they used to test...
I'm sorry, it scares me, you know, knowing that.
Well, and believe me, I don't want to scare you. I want to encourage you and lift you up.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
But that's what I was going to read also. I didn't get to it, but they have shown that when somebody has Alzheimer's, they absolutely have the lowest production of melatonin of all time. So I would rather focus on ways that we're going to heal the body. So if you want to deplete all the melatonin, then drugs are the way to do that. Just about every drug I could mention probably severely depletes the body of melatonin, but blood thinners are very, very famous for doing that. Maybe because even a baby aspirin a day has been shown to destroy the lining of the gut and induce what's called leaky gut syndrome. I don't know if you've ever heard the term leaky gut syndrome.
Yes, I've heard it.
I had a very, very nice gentleman call me on the phone. He was the very first caller maybe 3 weeks ago, and I've I wish I'd said this, but you know, that's how my brain works. I think to myself, Roy, you should have told him this, because this was his answer right there. So maybe I'm making up for it. But he's doing all these things right, but he has horrible arthritis pain in his hands and thumbs.
Uh-huh.
And I wish I told him, I said, well, the reason that you have severe arthritis is because you have a leaky gut. Sometimes it's just called leaky gut syndrome. And and aspirin can destroy that. Or there's other reasons, but the solution would be, what do we do to restore the integrity of the gut where it doesn't leak molecules that settle in the joint and then have your immune system attack them? So, if you'll have your...
Would all of this thing, what you're telling me, that would that also be, I guess that would also affect people who are like obsessive compulsive or forgetful and other
yes.
things too?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, that's, yeah, because I've been having that problem going up too.
Well, and one of the things you got to think of is there's a time that you go, you know what, I don't like the way I'm thinking right now. I wish I could focus
all
and concentrate. But that tells me there's some low-grade inflammations brewing or stemming from the brain, and we want to resolve that. I had a gentleman come see me this week, and he was telling me, he said, you remember back in December when I came in for those real severe headaches that were driving me crazy and stuff? I said, yeah. He said, that's gone. I'm going, good. That's what we're after. But you have to be able to pinpoint where the problem's coming from. And I think sometimes as a doctor, that's my main job. If I can identify the greatest source of weakness in a person, then we can start going through what's the solution to this. So,
okay, not including the food. I've been to Karen's house food one time with my dad years ago, and she's got a lot of good stuff. On the sulfur thing, what consistency or type?
The easiest form of sulfur to recommend is called MSM.
MSM.
That's just an organic form of sulfur, and I usually think it's very easy on the body, but. You cut me a little bit of slack here, because I understand the principle that 98 out of 100 people would take MSM and say, I've gotten great results. This is tremendous.
What does it look like? Is it a powder, sir?
You can get it in powder or tablet or capsule form.
Which would you suggest?
Well, I think the easiest, if you get it in tablet or capsule, you can just swallow it and be done with it.
Okay, so if, you think the capsule would be better then?
Yes, and have you ever tasted the powdered MSM before? It doesn't taste so hot.
No, I never knew it existed.
I mean, I'm kind of a weirdo. I can put a lot of things in my mouth that most people wouldn't, but I think even with this, I would rather put some a tablet or a capsule in and call it good.
Yes. Okay, well, I sure appreciate that.
You're welcome. I hope it helps
you. I'm learning some stuff. I've been listening to you for a number of years, and I'm learning stuff today. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Well, check into the...
You got me floored, and I'm so happy about it, too.
Oh, well, you're sure easy to please. Well, thank you.
Well,
You're very kind.
Well, Mr., I forgot your last name. Anyway, I want to thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You helped me more than anybody else.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for your phone call. Oh, God bless you, too. I wish you great success.
I have a feeling it will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right, let me go back to this article right here. And you tell me if it's worth the price of admission today. Actually, we have a phone call. That is so much more important. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I hope you're having a good day.
I am. Thanks for asking. How's your day starting so far?
A little rough, but, you know, all right.
What can I do to be positive and help you then?
I've just been having... insomnia and stuff.
I'm so sorry.
And well, I got on the depression medicine for a short time, and it just knocked me for a loop. I was doing better before I had it, so I quit taking that.
Do you remember the name of the medication?
Now you ask me that.
I'm sorry. I was just curious in my mind, because if I hear what the medication is, sometimes I can figure out how it works.
Yes.
But you don't have to look it up if you don't want to.
Oh, I got it right here. It's Lexapro.
Okay.
It's a generic for Lexapro.
But you're telling me that you are not better off for taking it. Is that correct?
No, okay, not all right. at all.
I believe you. I totally believe you.
Yeah, dizzy spells, all kinds of mess. So I only took it for a couple of weeks, just 5 milligrams. But anyway, that's just why I'm not feeling that great today. I had insomnia and stuff last night, you know, still getting off of it. But my main question is, I know a while back you said that there's a way to cleanse your gallbladder from the stones.
Yeah,
I have a lot of pain sometimes, you know, certain things I eat or whatever, or stress, and I press under my right rib cage.
Yeah.
And when I belch, the pain goes away. But I know that that's not a solution.
No, well, it's a solution to diagnosing it, though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think you're a great diagnostician. You'd make a great doctor.
Well, I listen to you.
I don't remember ever discussing the gallbladder over the last 23 years. Anyway, no, that's good. Well, no, I think you're right on track, and I want to throw something into the mix here.
Okay.
There is a hormone that is produced by your body called cholecystokinin. I don't expect you've ever heard of cholecystokinin, but it's real.
No.
And there was an article that I read years ago, and I found it very fascinating. It was saying, what is it that initiates your body to start manufacturing a neurotransmitter called serotonin? And you know as well as I do that usually when people have plenty of serotonin in reserve in their body, they feel like, oh, this is going to be a great day, everything is going great, it's just going to be so smooth. I'm going to have fun going to garage sales in the Fog Embankment this morning in Jacksonville. It's just going to go great. I think I made that last part up. But anyway.
Oh, it's right up my alley.
But when, well, mine too. But when somebody has very low levels of serotonin, they think, oh, man, this is not going to work out. When is all this stress going to be over? I just can't believe this is happening to me. But when you have plenty of serotonin, that's usually when you have very generous sleep at night and you feel good and you're refreshed. But in order to make melatonin, that sleep chemical, it's made from serotonin. You've probably heard that before, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, the one thing that stimulates the chain of events to get the ball rolling for your body to start making serotonin, it's cholecystokinin. And I find that very intriguing because cholecystokinin, it tells your gallbladder to start to contract and push bile into your intestines so you can start absorbing your food and remove toxins. Okay. And so I always find that very interesting. I always kind of link depression with the gallbladder.
Ah, okay.
And so I'm going to give you two scenarios here, and I'm just sort of joking as I say this. But if I set a plate of food in front of you that you know that I prepared myself,
oh, yes, of course.
It could be a ribeye steak with asparagus and cauliflower mashed potatoes with butter and whatever seasons or spices that you like, topped off with a bowl of frozen cherries and whipped cream. Anyway, but if you ate that super, super fast, like a pit bull, you know, two bites and it's gone, I would say probably not going to go real well. But if you eat it very slowly, that's called the parasympathetic nervous system. See, you could be busy all day long, but when you sit down to eat, the more relaxed you are when you have people around you and you get to visit and it's like social, it's kind of like if you go to a fellowship dinner at church or you go out to eat with friends or a birthday party, it's just so fun being around other people and you get to visit. I mean, you like all that stuff, don't you?
Yes, that's my problem. All my family and grandkids and great-grands are in Houston area.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I think that's very rude of them to move that far south of you. But they're not asking about... Oh, you were the one that moved?
Yes.
Did you have a reason to move up here?
Oh, yes, my sister, yes.
Okay. Well, that's very sweet of you to be with her. But I always connect gallbladder dysfunction with depression, and I'm not saying that to label you or anybody else. So sometimes trying to get the gallbladder working better is one of those things that can help you greatly. So let me give you some ideas, okay?
Okay.
You asked me about a gallbladder flush, but what I want to do is I want to reframe all this, and you tell me if it's doable, okay?
Okay.
What if we tried for the next, I'm going to say 10 days to 2 weeks, because I think that's a fair amount of time. If you were to take one bunch of celery, run it through the juicer, and just drink that celery juice every morning when you got up, I think that has
a very good therapeutic action upon your liver and your bile ducts.
Yes.
Another thing that I like very, very much, I don't think it's controversial, it's just the taste is like dirt, but it works. If you take one beet, let's say you go to the grocery store like Aldi's and you get a bunch of beets for 97 cents or whatever the price is, and you take one of those beets and clean it and you put it in the in your blender, not the juicer but the blender.
Yeah.
And you take the juice of one lemon and you just ream it out, or you squeeze it or extract it or press it, whatever you have to do. But if you put the juice of one lemon into the blender with that beet and maybe about 8 ounces of unfiltered apple juice, and that's the kind of apple juice that you see in those glass jugs. They look like, yeah, a jug that a moonshiner would
right,
use to fill up with moonshine. Not that I have any experience with the moonshine. I'm just saying. Oh, but if you put the... If, yes. It helps me focus on the radio on Saturday mornings. I'm joking. I do not do that.
I know you don't.
Although, if ethanol builds up in my gas tank, I might pour some moonshine in try to clean it out anyway. But if you took 8 ounces of unfiltered apple juice, the kind that looks like rusty water, that contains, yeah, an enzyme called pectinase. And if you added between 1 and maybe 2 tablespoons of a high-quality extra virgin olive oil, that'd be great. As a matter of fact, I read in a journal recently, they tested all the different brands of olive oil, and a lot of them failed as far as purity and, you know, potency, but there is one that you can buy at the store called Bertoli, and it was in the top 3.
Well, how about that?
I'm ashamed to admit that I forgot the name of the other two, but Bertoli is one that I could probably remember, so I'm saying Bertoli. Right. And so if you blended that, you know, up on high, it's going to sound like a rock rolling around in there for a while until you pulverize it. But if you drink that every morning with that celery juice and wait about an hour, I think you're going to start to see some very unique changes in your gallbladder.
Okay.
And so if you try just those things first, now I can tell you what would be the best, and I hope you don't think that I'm sabotaging you, because when you start putting the beet, you know, beverage and celery, most likely your liver and your gallbladder, they're going to start the process of contracting the way that God designed them to. And when you start contracting and pushing bile into your small intestine, that kind of initiates these wave-like contractions called peristalsis, so you may need to have a bowel movement. But what I was going to say is, if you went for a 20 or 30 minute walk just on faith, weather permitting, this whole thing, you're going to greatly increase blood flow and circulation to your gallbladder, and I think that you'll see a very, very significant difference.
Okay.
Now, 2 more things that you can do, because I'm very, very sympathetic to you telling me that you're not doing as well as you'd like to do, and all we can do is just try it for, you know, call it a simple nutritional experiment if you wanted to.
Yes.
But I think, let me ask you a question. I don't know what your answer is going to be, but I have a guess. You know what it's like to feel really, really good on the inside. You feel like everything is going well, you're joyous. Even if you have some stress that comes up, you still can remain positive and you feel like you're balanced. But you also, on the flip side of the coin, know what it feels like to be maybe a little bit, you know, angst on the inside and a little bit nervous or jittery, and maybe you just don't feel so good on the inside. You know what that's
absolutely
like, don't you?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I think that the other thing that we have to consider is you probably have a little bit of what I'm going to call cortisol resistance.
Okay.
And cortisol resistance is very similar, as an analogy, to type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is when you have way, way, way too much insulin. It's not an insulin deficiency. It's too much. But there's so much that your cells say, we can't handle any more sugar. Stop it. We've taken up as much as we can. So all the excess goes to the blood, and you develop all these symptoms. Cortisol resistance, yes, is when your body over time pumps out too much cortisol, and we're trying to retrain that. If it were me, I'm going to be hard-pressed not to recommend at least an hour or two of sunshine a day. It doesn't have
cool.
to. Have you ever heard before that we have an ozone layer?
Yes.
Well, we have an ozone layer over Texas. And the ozone layer is what helps block a lot of the harmful radiation that comes from space to the Earth. So it blocks it. But there's one country that doesn't have an ozone layer over it. It's called Australia. So when they throw a shrimp on the Barbie, it gets sunburned from radiation also. But if I'm not mistaken, Australians, they have a lot more skin cancer because they get this excessive over-the-top radiation when they sunbathe. They don't have ozone. I really tried to impress you by saying that. Did that work?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. Good answer. And so if you were to get out in the sun, whether it's doing yard work or gardening or going for a walk or, you know, helping people out or raking, whatever you want to do, I think what we're doing is we're using natural light because you are a solar-powered battery. Mm-hmm. They have the condition called SAD. That stands for seasonal affective disorder.
Yes.
They have the condition called GLAAD. It's an acronym. I'm trying to think if I remember it. I think it's like good light at an adequate dose or something like that. Let me see. Okay. GLAAD. G-L-A-D. Good light, adequate dose. Okay, that's GLAAD.
Yeah.
It's funny how your mind works sometimes. You can't remember the simplest things. But GLAAD, they're saying that GLAAD, getting natural light, is more effective than any other technique for getting rid of this depressive, down, overcast state during the wintertime. My sister Terry told me we have 5 weeks to go before there's the daylight savings time change. I don't know about you, but I love it. I want light after I get off work so I can do stuff outside. I need light.
Yeah.
And so if you spend two or three hours a day out in the sunlight, it doesn't have to be direct sunlight where you're going to burn yourself. I don't want that for you at all.
Right.
If you took your shoes off and you put your bare feet on the surface of the earth or the grass and you start absorbing those electromagnetic electrons from the crust of the earth, I'm telling you, you're going to be a different person in a short period of time.
Yes. I love to go barefoot.
I could tell. I could almost smell the dirt emanating from the soles of your feet as we speak. Did you know the microphone here has sensors where I can smell?
No, I didn't know that.
I can tell also you have a blueberry cobbler sitting on the window to cool off. Is that correct?
No. Now, you're wrong there. I have to correct you.
You're not very good at playing along with my...
But...
It's
not blueberry season.
There is an herb called... rhodiola. Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
I want you to look into it. Usually it comes from a small yellow flower that grows on the side of mountains, and the way it was discovered is when mountain climbers were going up the side of a tall peak that was just exhausting every, you know, emotional drop of energy they have, and their sheer force of will was just cratering. They learned to chew on this little bit of yellow flower, and all of a sudden they'd get their strength back, and their desire to press on would increase. But I'm telling you, rhodiola works.
God is good, isn't he?
God is very good, yet well said. He has given us almost everything that we need.
Yes.
If we just know what to go for. The problem is, God has the patent on rhodiola. And so it can't be sold as a drug.
True.
I guarantee you, if pharmaceutical companies could get the patent on rhodiola or mushroom extracts or vitamin C or magnesium, oh, my word. They'd want to control it, and it'd cost 1,000 times as much.
Yes.
So,
that's what I wanted to ask you. Magnesium. How much of that should I be taking
you're at the mercy of what the manufacturer provides. So there's a lot of forms of magnesium. I'm very fond of magnesium lactate just because it's a food-based form. But when you eat things like oatmeal... It's rich in magnesium. Do you like avocados at all?
Absolutely, yes.
Do avocados survive at your house very long, or are they completely destroyed? Are they
completely destroyed? I'll eat
good.
A whole one. Yeah.
Well, what I want you to do is I want you to consider using a type of salt called Celtic salt, or Celtic, C-E-L-T-I-C, because its richest base is magnesium. And that's the other part about being a battery. You've got to have minerals to make it work.
Yes.
Minerals.
I've been using that pink Himalayan salt.
That's great. But I think Celtic salt's probably going to work a little bit better and faster, and it's going to give you a boost.
Okay.
Even if you told me you feel really, really down,
like, great, this is not going to be a great night's rest. I don't know what I'm going to do. If you took a little pinch of Celtic salt and let it dissolve on your tongue, I bet you starting tonight you're going to sleep the best you've slept in a long time.
Oh,
you've got
great.
To
I'll
have minerals to manufacture all these brain chemicals.
Okay.
All right, I tricked you. Good.
Okay, I have one request of your wife.
Okay.
Because she cooks for you. I would like for her to write a book, even if it's just a 2-week, 1-month menu of what she fixes and how she keeps you
okay.
healthy.
I'll do
an
it.
Idea.
I'll do it. Thank you for your phone call.
Okay.
All right. Have a good day, ma'am. I hope you have a great night's sleep tonight.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Bye-bye. All righty then. 903-586-5257. If nobody calls, I'm going to read this pain article to you that I find very, very intriguing and very, very, I'm telling you, to me, this is great information. Okay. In 1986, a group of Swedish researchers became interested in the fact that depressed people and chronic pain sufferers have many similarities in their brain chemicals and hormone levels. And the question is, would chronic pain sufferers also have low levels of melatonin? As hypothesized, they found that the chronic pain sufferers in their study had low levels of melatonin compared with the controls. Patients with nerve-related pain, they had the lowest levels of all. To me, that is very interesting. I know this. I want to pursue that topic and learn more. What is the most intriguing to me about the relationship between melatonin and chronic pain is that melatonin has potent analgesic properties, suggesting a cause and effect relationship between low melatonin levels and pain. A group of researchers from the University of California became interested in the possible pain-relieving properties of melatonin when they know that many animals are less sensitive to pain at night. This is true for both nocturnal and diurnal animals. In one experiment, they placed mice on a very warm surface and observed how long it took them to show signs of discomfort. It took an average of 62 seconds in the daytime, but 110 seconds at night, indicating that the mice had a higher tolerance for pain at nighttime. Other studies had shown that the mice are the most tolerant of pain shortly after midnight, which is when they have the highest levels of melatonin. The California researchers' next step was to give rodents varying amounts of melatonin to see if added amounts of the hormone increased their tolerance to pain. They found that the more melatonin they gave the rodents, the longer they were willing to stay on the hot surface. At the highest dose, which was 90 milligrams per kilogram of melatonin, that's a lot, by the way, the mice tolerated moderate pain 3 times as long as they did without the melatonin. In fact, dose per dose, melatonin was almost as effective at relieving pain as morphine. Whoa! A group of researchers from Canada have explored the relationship between aging, melatonin, and pain. In the initial study, they found that young mice stayed on the hot surface for an average of 46 seconds before they showed discomfort. But a group of old mice started licking their feet after only 25 seconds. Were the older mice more sensitive to pain because they had lost their useful supply of melatonin? Well, I don't know the answer to that. I'll read it to you next week. Unfortunately, we're completely out of time. I have enjoyed every bit of being with you this morning. Lord willing, I will be with you again next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. And I pray that God looks upon you with tremendous favor and things go really well for you this week as you try to help yourself and improve your health. My name is Dr. Roy Morgan, and this is Health Essentials.